Okay. Well, the work that Christians Against Poverty do is amazing around the country, and being able to partner with them on doing this debt centre is wonderful. I was able to make it to one of their annual conferences. Just wonderful heart, the keynote speakers, and just all that they're doing is serving the church, enabling and equipping and helping the church to do what we want to be doing. So it's wonderful partnership. And we have Peter Snell here, who's going to just share a bit about CAP, what they do, a bit more about the debt centre, and just a bit of the heart behind what we're doing. So it's really great to have you, Peter. So over to you.
Great. Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. What a pleasure to be here today. I live in Bailden with my wife, Ailey, so it wasn't too far for us to travel. We're just adding a new addition to our family as well, if we could get that picture up on screen. I know, isn't she lovely? Poppy, the cockapoo. We pick her up today. So if at any point over the next few months life gets a bit heavy, just think of Poppy, and that'll cheer you up. Right. Okay. So I started working for CAP 8 years ago. And one of the things that you got to do then as a new employee was go along to a debt centre. And so 8 years ago, I was sat slightly nervously in a mid-sized family car looking at this unremarkable red brick semi just on the outskirts of York. It was a sunny day. I was a fresh-faced intern at the time, tagging along. What I didn't know at that moment was how that experience would break my heart. Poverty can be this very abstract thing. You know, before that moment, it was a dotted line on a graph that said what percentage of people had an income below a certain level that theoretically meant that life was kind of hard. But after that moment, for me, the abstract became reality. And so today, we're going to look a little bit at the posture that Jesus calls us to have towards those experiencing poverty. We're going to look at the issue of debt. Why, of all the things you could do as a church, have you chosen to do debt? Why does it matter? And you're going to hear how it from one of our clients as well on the screen, and hear him share his story in his own words. And finally, of course, have the opportunity to respond as well in the ways that have just been outlined so beautifully there. So what posture does Jesus call us to have towards those experiencing poverty? Our passage this morning is Luke chapter 4, especially verses 12 to 14. So if you want to follow along in your Bibles, you can bring it up there. And to set the scene, this narrative unit, it starts at the beginning of Luke chapter 14. And Jesus is basically at a dinner party. He's made the invite list. Together with the Pharisees, presumably rich and influential friends, and we're told he's being carefully watched by them. What you need to know is that banquets, they held this really prominent place in the Jewish imagination. See, Jews of that time, they expected that the re-establishing of God's kingdom was going to be marked with a great banquet. You know, wine, honey, food, all of that stuff, which I think sounds pretty good personally. And so when Jesus, this teacher, some said he was a prophet, starts talking about feasts immediately, they're thinking, oh, where's he going here? What's going on? And what happens in this passage is Jesus, he gives them an instruction in verses 12 to 14. And then he tells them a parable in verses 15 to 24. But the parable, it actually really nicely illustrates the instruction that he gives them. So first I'm going to summarize that, and then we're going to look at that passage. So here we go, verses 15 to 24, the short version. So a man holds a great banquet. And again, Jesus is dialing into this kingdom of heaven imagery of the expectation that they had. And so this man, he invites people to the banquet. And based on what we hear next, these are largely people with some wealth or property, well-to-do, upstanding members of society. And he's like, great, got my party coming. I'm excited. Except the day of the banquet, Suddenly, they all start making excuses, one after another, they bail. You know, it's like he's got a WhatsApp group where it just keeps coming in and just, no, no, no. It's like, I've got no one left. His fattened calf is going cold in the oven. What's a man to do? And so he gets his servant, the master, and he says, look, I want you to throw the invite list wide open. Go out into the country, the lanes. I want you to find people that are disabled, people that are poor, anyone that is socially marginalized, and bring them in. So the banquet's going to be full of those people. And the people that I said to come, just tell them not to show up. Now, told in the way that Jesus tells it, this story, he couldn't be clearer. He's saying, there is a banquet coming. The kingdom of God that you're looking towards, it is coming. Even in other places in the gospel, he says it is here, but not in the way you expect it. In fact, he's saying to the Pharisees, your priorities are so wrong. You're at risk of missing out on the invite altogether. You're one of those people that's bailing on the WhatsApp group without even realizing it. And instead, God is throwing the invite list wide open. Now, sometimes when we think of Pharisees, we can kind of think, you know, there's a slightly judgmental tone, and there's other places in the Gospels where it feels like Jesus does tell things by way of judgment. But I don't actually think that's the tone here. I think this passage is an invitation to them. See, Jesus is saying, look, there's still time to enter into this kingdom that you say you value, this way of life. There's still time to start reflecting the practices and priorities of the one that you call king in the way you live your life. And he's saying, look, pay attention. Here's how you do it. So let's take a look at Luke 14. Then Jesus said to his host, when you give a luncheon or dinner, don't invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives or your rich neighbors. Well, if you do, they may invite you back and so you'll be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you'll be blessed. For although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Jesus' message, in a sense, is really, really simple. See, then, as it is now, who you ate with, it was the defining social activity that said what and who you valued. And then, as it is now, the social norm is you invite people who would invite you back. And then, and still today, Jesus is saying a life that pleases God is one that turns all of that on its head. He's saying, if you want to reflect the practices and priorities of the coming kingdom, here's what you do. Welcome those to your table who can't repay you. Welcome those to your table who can't repay you. But maybe you're thinking, well, Peter, what does table actually mean here? Is this a sort of metaphorical table? Is it a literal thing? What's going on? Well, firstly, it really is quite literal, eating and drinking with those who can't repay you. See, the only other use of the Greek word that comes here, dochein, in the New Testament is in Luke chapter 5, where Jesus is actually feasting with Levi, the tax collector, and his disreputable friends. In a sense, it really is that simple. But there's also a sense here of this wider principle in terms of what we're called to as followers of Jesus, that we have a posture of intentional generosity and relational priority to those who can't repay us. You know, I thought the stories about the refugees and what you're doing to serve them in the community was just such a beautiful example of putting this into practice, creating a table, creating a space where those who can't repay you feel welcomed and loved. And I tell you what, actually, joining in as a befriender with Helen's Center is going to be one of the best ways that you can do that. So that's a little bit on the posture we're called to have biblically. But of course, there's lots of injustice in the world. There's lots of difficulties. There's lots of things that you can do. So why, above anything else, have you chosen to focus on debt? Why is debt a justice issue? A little bit of stats for you. There was a report that was done in 2018 on debt advice nationwide. It broke it down by local authority, so they did Leeds. And they found that Leeds had a face-to-face debt advice provision for about 1,600 people. Sounds not bad. Except it found that the demand for face-to-face debt advice was 5,000. A huge gap between the need and the capacity that was there to help. And see, the issue is, it's actually really quite hard to get out of debt. I don't know if you know, but it actually costs you money in many instances to get out of debt. If you go through an insolvency process, it can cost anything in England between £90 and £680 that you have to find to actually go through an insolvency process. Not only is it expensive, it also involves long and complicated forms. You need to know what you're doing to make sure you're selecting the right option for yourself. But then on top of all of that, debt is a nightmare for mental health. I know there are just statistically plenty of people in this room right now. You know the pressure of struggling to manage money. You know the weight that that can put, the anxiety that can cause, the depression. And so if you're in debt, you're quite possibly anxious, depressed, and then it's really expensive and really complicated to get out of it. Now, the good news if you're a middle to high earner is that there is an industry, there's companies that can work with you, they can provide a valuable service to you and make a profit by helping you get out of debt. And that's not necessarily a bad thing if it's done properly, and they help some people. But here's the thing. If you're poor, if your debt burden is so overwhelming it would take you decades to repay, and you're especially if you're on a low income, then you're quite possibly anxious, depressed, facing massive complexity and cost, but without anyone that is able to help you. There's some things that are online sometimes that can help you a bit. There's things that will kind of be a brief face-to-face interaction, but very few, if any, other people like CAP that work on a nationwide scale that go, you know what, we're going to help the people that are poorest and vulnerable and most need it. Debt, it traps people like a lead weight around their ankle, restricting their options and choices. And actually, as you start helping people in debt in Leeds, you're going to be helping people that often you are going to be their only option to release them back into a life of freedom. We're going to watch a video now of a guy called Simon, and he really explains what that means in a way that I never could. So let's watch his story.
Looking back on it, it's actually quite frightening. And I'm not a guy that frightens easily, but that, looking back on it, it is actually quite frightening that he got to that point. My name's Sid. I'm 58 years old. In my younger life, I was well into sport, cricket, rugby, boxing. Used to get paid for playing cricket and rugby. Actually playing cricket with Ian Botham, Graham Hick, Tom Moody, virtually half the England side were at Worcester at that time. I seriously injured myself, which meant that my sporting career was not over, but it would never be professional as I wanted it to be. I actually had an accident at work and something fell on my head. They took me up and gave me an x-ray. And this lovely little chap came through and he said, oh, we found something that's not there, not supposed to be there. And I went, oh, you mean a brain? And he said, no, you got a tumour. And I said, no, I'm indestructible, mate, I don't get things like that. Can't happen to me. Brain tumour was operated on April 2015. Pretty much a year later, was diagnosed with Crohn's, which is quite a nasty stomach disorder. Admitted to hospital, and just before I was admitted to hospital, my mother passed away, who I've been looking after for a few years, quite suddenly as well. It turned out I was suffering from a very severe depression because of what had been going on. And obviously during that time as well, I was getting into debt without actually knowing I was getting into debt. I was on some quite heavy duty medication and it just spiralled. So pretty much everybody you could owe money to, I owed money to. The nurse came into the room and she said, "Can I get you anything?" I said, "No, just shut the door and let me die. I'd had enough." The will to fight it had just gone. So they looked after me in hospital and fixed the broken bits again and got me up and running. And when I came out, someone referred me or said to me, "If you've got problems, give these people a ring," and gave me a card. And when I got home is when I made the phone call to CAP. I tried to collect everything that was relevant to what was going on, so letters and bills and all the correspondence. And everything was explained, which puts you so much at ease because you actually, for the first time, know what's going on. And then Andrew said to me, "I'll give you some," he actually gave me a load of prepaid envelopes. "If anything comes, send this off to CAP." And for the first time, think, crikey, there's a way out of this, you know. It was like a weight being lifted off my shoulders. Brilliant. That's when Andrew dropped the bombshell. "Did you fancy coming to church on Sunday?" said. So I said, "No, all right, no, that'd be nice, come along." And I turned up knowing two people, Andrew and Chris. When I left, 20 plus people, "See you next week, Sid, have a good week, see you next..." I'm going, crikey, it's a bit different, isn't it? They're all very nice. That was 4 years ago, but maybe a bit longer. And apart from the times when I've been in hospital, I've not missed a Sunday. I see things totally differently now. My whole attitude is different now. I wake up every day, and every day is now a lovely day. Without CAP, Gary, Andrew and Chris and the church, I actually would rather not think about where I would be now. It really has made that much of a difference to my life. It's that sense of belonging and the sense of friendship. To me, it is priceless.
I'm glad you got Sid's, not Simon. I think he's more appropriate. I thought I'd send Simon's link, but that's great. I think Sid's story was perfect. We're fortunate. If you want any more stories, you can see them on CAP's website. But yeah, just what a beautiful spirit. What a beautiful story. What an amazing God who is able to draw near to people in their lowest moments and restore hope and life again. Just as I start to come into land, I want to address a bit of an elephant in the room around the cost of living crisis. What you're doing with debt, it is going to make a huge difference for people. It is going to help people that otherwise wouldn't be able to cope in the coming months to get their budget on an even keel. But the truth is as well, there are those for whom actually no amount of budgeting or debt help is going to help make their budget balance. It doesn't matter how many energy saving hacks they use, they're just is no way, not without making the choice to freeze in a badly insulated home or skip meals so the children can eat, which is the very real choices some people are going to be facing. CAP's vision is for transformed lives, thriving churches, and an end to UK poverty. And that happens in many ways, one life at a time, as we draw alongside people like SIT, as churches wherever we are. But it also happens by us collectively lifting up our voices as the Church of Jesus Christ to advocate for a just and compassionate society in our nation. So I invite you today to pray for that. And CAP also has a Write to Your MP action. If we could just get a link on the screen. If you, at some point today, just take a minute to go to capuk.org, write to your MP. You can send a really clearly written, expertly drafted letter that contains some specific things that the government could be doing over the next 6 months to help those who are most vulnerable. So I really invite you to consider doing that. I started off by talking about this experience that broke my heart when I first started working for CAP. The woman that we visited, she had actually been a victim of domestic violence, and her partner had not only expressed that violence towards her, but he destroyed virtually every piece of furniture in the house, even the toilet bowl. There wasn't even a functioning toilet in the house because of that. And in that moment, I was just overwhelmed by both the dignity of this woman. So she had kept a ledger of her debt. She'd arranged repayments on her own behalf, that they were taking virtually all of her income, but she was doing it, but she had nothing left to live on. This incredible dignity and strength, and yet also intense vulnerability and lack of options that she had. See, the beautiful thing about this debt centre is it's not only going to transform lives in your community, it's going to transform your life as well. Actually, anyone that's involved in this, or for that matter, any work serving those experiencing poverty, whether that's refugees or whether it's all of the other things that I've been told when I was speaking to Rich beforehand that you do as a church community in serving them, it changes your heart. And so I really invite you to, if you haven't yet had the chance, to think about becoming a befriender, joining the prayer team, or getting involved in some way, to reflect on that today, because it will be hard, it will be difficult, but it will also open up your heart for God's heart in a really new and beautiful way.